fourth case today, United States versus Mixon.
Good morning. May it please the court. I speak for Sherman Mixon this morning, whose case is small and factually quite unusual. Sherman Mixon had a gun. He had it in his pocket one day in January. That gun was made before 1898. This is something on which the parties are agreed. Now, at least the government acknowledged in its responsive brief that the gun was manufactured before 1898. So there is, I think, no discord between the parties here on this proposition, that had Mr. Mixon's gun been unloaded, this case necessarily would have remained in state court, where the possession of this gun, regardless when made and regardless whether loaded or not, would have violated Wisconsin law.
But here's my question. He isn't charged for possession of the gun. He's
right.
Charged with possessing the ammunition, the 5 9-millimeter rounds. And it does seem to me that it's quite possible to own a gun that doesn't have any ammunition in it, or it's quite possible not to be a felon and to have either an old gun with ammunition or an old gun without ammunition. There are all kinds of ways you can cut this. And I don't see any problem with the indictment itself for saying that he possesses ammunition. He does possess ammunition. It happens to be in the gun. I don't know whether you're making a proof argument as to what, as opposed to an attack on the indictment, because if your real argument is that the government failed to show that the 9-millimeter rounds were capable of use in modern guns, if I can call them that, that's a different issue, you know, and it's not an indictment problem, it's a proof issue.
Yes, that's right. And
so are you conceding the indictment itself is okay as far as it goes?
Yes, facially the indictment alleged a crime.
Okay.
That is true. This arose as a motion to dismiss, but I really did draw on what was undisputed here, which is that this was an antique.
Was the weapon rechambered to accept a 9-millimeter?
You know,
it's a 38. That's what I don't understand. It's a 38 caliber weapon.
Right.
What,
you know, I honestly don't know the answer to that.
I've got to ask the government that, too, because furthermore, if it was rechambered, I think that may take it out of the fact that it's an antique weapon.
There's certainly no evidence in the record that the gun had been rechambered or altered, redesigned, modified in any way. There's no evidence at all. I wondered about that. I can't give the court an answer. I looked at the gun. It didn't, you know, but I'm no expert in guns, believe me. And my understanding is that a 9-millimeter bullet, if translated to fractions of an inch, comes in a little bit under 38/100ths of an inch.
So it would fit in the
maybe a loose fit, for want of a more artful way of
describing it. Well, the purpose of the antique exception is because people collect antique weapons, right? Firearms?
I think that's reasonably the purpose. Congress makes this reference to recreation and self-defense, and obviously
They don't collect antique ammunition, do they? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. They obviously do collect antique guns, and I think there's no reason here in the statutory matrix to assume that Congress meant that you couldn't fire an antique gun.
Well, there's where I have a problem with your logic. I can see every reason why Congress, having gone to the trouble of making it unlawful for felons to possess ammunition, to think that it really doesn't matter if you've put the ammunition into an antique gun or whether you're carrying it in your pocket. I mean, you have the ammunition.
Look at the other two subcategories, though, of antique firearms, replicas and muzzleloaders. You know, Congress
well,
very
what they suggest to me is that Congress might have thought that if you are, you know, some Civil War enthusiast, you know, who wants to go out with the original powder and all the rest of that, they're not really worrying about you because they don't think modern-day criminals are going to rob video stores with that kind of thing. But if you've got modern ammunition that either somehow or another fortuitously fits in an old gun or you've rechambered the old gun or whatever, they are worried about you.
No, but that's not what Congress said as to replicas and muzzleloaders. It, you know, with replicas, the replica may not use conventional centerfire or rimfire fixed ammunition.
Right.
But then, you know, implicitly, I guess, can use any other form of ammunition. And with muzzleloaders, Congress spoke affirmatively. They're to use black powder or a black powder substitute, whatever
but
that
means. But I assume these 9mm bullets were, in fact, fixed ammunition. He couldn't have used them in a replica.
I'm willing to assume they're fixed ammunition, too, although that's not a defined term.
Don't know.
But I've assumed it all along. But, you know, Let's look at muzzle loaders. And I agree. People don't stick up the video store with Captain Hook's flintlock. I understand that. But, you know, Congress is saying you can use black powder with these. You can't use fixed ammunition, but use
well,
black powder.
It's not very dangerous with black powder, I guess.
But, you know, black powder,
that, isn't
black
it?
Powder is a propellant.
Well, sure it is,
and
but it's not.
It's not
as reliable as a center fire cartridge.
No, that's probably
or a
true.
Rim fire cartridge.
I'll stay away from the business end of any one of these things, regardless. But the fact is that black powder, I think, is a propellant that falls technically within the definition of ammunition. And yet, clearly, here we have Congress contemplating a delimitation on some but not all forms of ammunition as to replicas and muzzle loaders.
Now, get back to the question I asked initially, is whether it was rechambered. It seems to me when you start changing the nature of the weapon, it's no longer an antique. I know that's not, in the gun industry, not accepted, but I,
you know, and that's,
people that involve themselves in antiques may consider that.
And as to a replica, Your Honor, I think Your Honor's right, that because the definition replica says, you know, you can't redesign this to fire fixed ammunition, at least if that's still commercially available, fixed ammunition. As to the pre-1898 gun, Congress tells us nothing about that. And the you know, that's a valid argument. I'm just saying we don't get any help from Congress in the statute or, as far as I know, in the legislative history.
They spoke to the muzzle loading because there's an industry circular that came out in 97 talked about muzzle loaders, changing them, and said, no, that takes it outside the protected.
Right. And of course, muzzle loaders, you know, we make muzzle loaders today. Muzzle loaders may be new, they may be replicas. The pre-1898 antique, or the true antique, you know, that's a fixed set of guns and presumably dwindling. They were 70 years old when Congress first passed this law, and they're going on 110 years old now. So,
right. There's another problem with the statute, which I think just requires us to figure out what to do with it, because unfortunately, it's committing the sin of defining terms in terms of themselves.
Yes.
So it defines the term firearm not to include an antique firearm, and then you go over to antique firearm, and that's any firearm,
right,
this and that. And then you get to ammunition.
Ammunition is
use in any firearm. So right. Since you've defined an antique firearm as a type of firearm, and then you've defined firearm not to include, I mean, you've got this, like, endless circle, and they didn't figure out some other word to tell us which definition of firearm did they mean to use in subpart 17.
That's right, and they started off pretty well in the definition of firearm.
Well, from your point of view, yes.
Well, but at least by using the term weapon,
right?
No,
yes,
and or destructive
going for a different
device
word, yeah,
rather than
right.
the circular
right.
problem. But I think if you look at what they're trying to accomplish here, an antique firearm is not a firearm. And that's the last sentence.
But then ammunition, they might have wanted to say that you could put in any type of fire. I can't believe Congress wanted ex-felons to go around shooting, you know, either old or new guns. But maybe...
Well, look, keep in mind that in this circuit, all three states would have proscribed Sherman Mixon carrying this gun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it would be perfectly reasonable for Congress to think that this is the small enough tip of the tail of the firearm problem in this country that we can leave this with the states. In 1968, getting into the gun business was controversial as it was, as a federalism matter. So I don't think this is an indefensible line or scheme that Congress drew, and Sherman Mixon's case could have and should have remained where it started, which was in Wisconsin state court.
Thank you, Mr. Strang.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gordon Giampietro. I'm an assistant United States attorney in Milwaukee, and I represent the United States in this case. The general theme of of Mr. Mixon's argument are really two themes. One is a federalism theme, and the other one is Congress's intent. The federalism theme that Mr. Mixon, since he was lurking around a Planet Hollywood video store in Glenwood, Wisconsin, with a loaded antique firearm, is not the kind of guy that Congress had in mind or would be able to regulate. That ship has sailed long ago. Supreme Court and this court has said over and over again, Congress certainly can regulate, at least in the context of firearms and ammunition, this type of, quote, local conduct. So the federal...
Mr. Giampietro, since we're not worrying about the indictment, as I understand it from Mr. Strang's argument, what evidence did the government introduce at the trial to show that these 9mm bullets were suitable for use in modern firearms?
Judge, I think... Well, the first answer is I think this was sort of an unusual case in the sense that this was not... The government would not agree to a conditional plea, so the defendant wanted some way to try to obtain an acceptance responsibility under the guidelines by not putting the government through its entire burden of proof. And so the stipulation really was the defendant's effort to not really make the government put on its evidence except through by acknowledging the elements of or have been met of the statute. And I think if you look at the record in a number of different places, the sentencing transcript itself in this case, which is at the record at 113, the defendant indicates, or his counsel indicates, we pled guilty in this case. Now, I realize this was not a guilty plea in the sense that we understand it, but it was certainly the defendant's intent to plead to the statutory elements. Same thing with respect to the record at 89, the defendant's objections to the PSR. I'm sorry, that's the record at 96. He argues, trying to get acceptance by saying that the defendant clearly stipulated a factual guilt. So, Judge, I acknowledge that there were not exhibits marked at this trial clearly.
But what are they? I mean, was the gun rechambered?
Judge, I think that goes to your questions earlier, and I think Mr. Strang answered it properly, which is the retooling of a firearm, such as this particular gun, really falls into the replica categories of 16A. This clearly is a gun, I think, the record substantiates, was manufactured prior to 1898.
Right.
And so you really don't get into the question of was the gun reconditioned. It's really a function of you're under 16A, not the subparts dealing with the replicas. So the record is not clear at all as to whether the gun was...
But the ATF, and maybe because of the powder, but says if you... restructure a muzzle loader so it uses a primer in a particular way. It's outside of the protected category.
And I agree with that, Judge, but I think I'm going back to I think Judge Wood's comments earlier, and this is how the government charged this case. It was an ammunition case, not a firearm case. And so really, if you look at the definition of 17A, this is ammunition under that definition. I think it's somewhat of a diversion to go to 16A, the definition of antique firearm. That is really not what this case is about, and I think that's why the record is.
So you're saying what the plea was to forget the fire, forget the gun itself, the revolver. All you're talking about is the five rounds.
Absolutely, that's how the case was charged.
It was shipped from Germany.
I believe they were Russian made ammunition. So there's really no evidence.
In 1898, they didn't measure ammunition categories in millimeters. They inches at 0.38 is the fraction of an inch that
Yes, Judge, and I take both of your comments to say that there might have been a decent case here to charge this as also a felon in possession of a firearm that didn't qualify as an antique. But not going down that road, the government charged it as an ammunition case. And so, Judge, I guess in response to your initial question in terms of the evidence, I think this is really a challenge to the sufficiency of the evidence, that given the stipulated trial, goes nowhere.
In this stipulation, he does stipulate that he had ammunition, and you would say that means, as that term is defined in the statute?
Yes, Judge. I think if you look at the posture of this case, if this truly were a dispute about the sufficiency of the evidence, there would have been a motion filed at the close of the court trial. It would have been the first argument on appeal. The parties certainly understood that what the defendant was trying to do here was plead to factual guilt, but preserve this argument that as long as the ammunition is in an antique firearm, Congress intended that he could possess it. So you're right. I've acknowledged there's not an exhibit in evidence that's the ammunition. That's not here at all. But I think that's a function of what the defendant was trying to accomplish, was to not put the government to its proof in order to get acceptance points.
So by failing to make those objections, or by choosing, I don't mean to fail in a pejorative sense, but by not making those objections, the government had no reason to put in evidence about when the ammunition was manufactured or what kinds of weapons it might be usable in today. So I assume you could have done that if somebody had said do it.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. That was clearly not the defense strategy at the district court, and certainly even not on appeal. The argument is purely one of statutory construction that Congress intended, by looking at these different sections, Congress intended for felons to be able to put ammunition and antique firearms. And as Your Honor pointed out earlier, it's a little bit odd to suggest that Congress didn't want felons to have loose ammunition in a gym bag, but they wanted them to have ammunition and an antique firearm, which may or may not be able to fire it.
Right.
I think read together, these sections suggest, as Your Honor indicated earlier, Congress did not want felons to have firearms with a limited exception of certain types of antiques, but Congress didn't want felons to have ammunition at all. And that's really what this case is about. For those reasons, Your Honor, we'd ask that the court affirm the conviction.
Thank you. Mr. Strang, your time has expired, but I'll give you a minute if you have some rebuttal.
I think I will use that minute just to give a succinct answer. There is no evidence in the record that the government offered of the design of these bullets. I also did move for judgment of acquittal orally upon submission of the stipulation, and then Judge Clivert making a finding of guilt. I don't recall that I elaborated on that motion for judgment of acquittal, but there was a challenge to sufficiency. The record is devoid of evidence on design. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strang. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. And